Well, good morning to all. It's good to be here with you. We look forward to coming. Glad to see those we've known before, especially Brother Roger back there. I've known him for, I don't know, half a century or a long time, you know. But it's good to be here. Appreciate the invitation to come. So I'll try to go through this fairly quickly. My time is a little bit short, but let you see something about the work of the Lord in other nations around the world. We live kind of isolated. We have our own nation, we have our freedom, we have many blessings, and it's quite different from other places in the world. Some years ago, we began doing work in Malaysia. Here's China and the peninsula coming down with Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, and all like that. And here is Malaysia. And over on the island of Borneo, the top one-third is Malaysia, the bottom two-thirds is Indonesia. This is a Muslim nation, and what we do there is illegal. They will allow denominations to exist if they've got headquarters somewhere, you know, like the Catholic Church headquarters in Rome. Our headquarters a little bit too far away for them to contact, so what we do is undercover. Have a little house church, two little house churches that we work with. I can't put a sign in the front yard, say the church meets here, whatever. So if we kind of keep it quiet, they don't bother us too much. So go to Kinabalu, is a city right up there, and we're right next door to the Philippines. You see the southern Philippine island coming down there. So in their culture, this was a British colony, got their independence about 1961 or two. In their culture, the wife keeps her maiden name. Justine Ho, she's Chinese. Nick was Malay and British mixed, and then their son. So the children take the first name of their father, and that's their last name. So nobody in the family has the same last name. Father has his, mother has hers, then the children. So it's kind of confusing when you see a family there trying to figure out who belongs to who and where they all fit in. Nick and Justina were workers in the medical field, and the government sent him to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to get some training in radiology. While he's there, she's stuck in an apartment with two little girls they had then, nothing to do. They were Catholics, and she saw an ad somewhere, dial a Bible message. On the other end of that telephone was a fellow named Andy DeClercq from South Africa, who was one of my schoolmates. He had gone to Cedar Rapids to start a church. So South Africa from Malaysia, they met in this little town in Iowa. They were converted and went back. And he started teaching some people. And one night, five men broke into their apartment and tried to kill him. And he decided, I need to know what I'm doing. So he talked the government into allowing him to go back to school one more year in the U.S. at Florida College, which they did not know was a Bible college, or that would not have happened. But he had heard about that through Andy DeClercq. And we were visiting one of our daughters down there. We met them, and that got us started going there so many years ago. Of course, this is Asian, you know, chopsticks. I've tried eating with chopsticks. I'm not very good at it, but that's what they do. You want to go to the meat market fairly early in the morning before all the flies get there, so you can buy your meat for the day. And as I said, it is a Muslim nation. It's okay to teach the orangutans, you know, if they'll listen to you, because they live around there. You just can't teach a Muslim by law. Of course, we do that some kind of undercover. This is typical of housing, some of the rural areas, built up on stilts. One thing, during the monsoon season, the floods come, a lot of rain, so they're above that, you know. Also, they had coral, cobra snakes in the area. They can't haven't learned to climb steps yet, so that's okay. Also, they use the carabao. We call them water buffalo, and they're farming. And when they're not working, they like to get in the shade, and so they can get under the house and sit there in the shade, so it all works out. We usually have about 30 on Sunday. In the dining area, that's where the Nick and Justina live. And, of course, there are many Buddhists there, the Chinese. One of my trips, we're out into the jungle. to have a Bible study with the family. You drive out the country, you park your car, cross a swinging bridge, and you can see, you know, there's some boards missing and like that. My wife was not real thrilled about that, but we got across. And then you walk through the jungle, and my first trip over there, we went out there, three of us, Americans and Nick, and we walked through the countryside, and then we wade through six rivers, no bridges, to reach this Kalasan tribe out of the jungles. And on our way back from that study, it must have been raining up the mountains because one of the rivers was higher, and Nick went under. They're short. Hopefully we had, you know, we had him by the arms and pulled him out. Got back to the road and was able to get in his van, but he got his remote control wet. We got the van started, but we could not turn off the alarm. So all the way, for whatever hours, back into town. So technology in the jungle did not work very well together. Nora came to the United States, was with us about 5 years. I won't go into all the details how she got there. She helped us care for my mother and for other elderly saint, and just a precious young woman. She was born in that jungle out there. Her mother died when she was 7 years old after giving birth to a child, lost so much blood. By the time they got her out of the jungle to a clinic somewhere, she had died. So Nick and Justina heard of her and another girl who were in an orphanage eventually, and they took her in. And so she was with us 5 years, went to school, did exceptionally well, had a good job in a restaurant, a place where you go and a nice dinner is $50, which is kind of out of our category. But she felt she needed to go home, and she went home. She wrote me a couple of weeks later, said, "Uncle David, why did I come back? It is so hot here," because we're down close to the equator. Thomas Tian, a Buddhist, Chinese Buddhist, was waiting for her these 5 years. He's been converted, and I was able to perform their wedding ceremony when we went back. Her father came in from the jungle, I guess the only time in his life he ever had a suit on, and it was quite an occasion to be able to. Here we are out of the jungle and having a Bible study in three languages. She brought a couple of her co-workers with her who did not speak English and did not speak Kalasan, the language. And so she's translating into Kalasan for them and into Chinese for her, for others, you know. So it's interesting to do that way. This is out in the joint. That's the kitchen in her sister's house. So you can see it's pretty simple living. One time she brought two of her co-workers for a Bible study. And then also Alice and Frankie were not married then, but he was a Buddhist and she was a Catholic and she was nothing. We had a Bible study one night and baptized them the next night. I was blown away. I was particularly blown away. A Buddhist in one Bible study. And they're married and have children and are still faithful. And Noreen, I don't know what's happened to her. And this is how they dress. These are school girls, and obviously the one in the middle is not a Muslim. But they've got, they're out, the girls are out playing basketball on an open courtyard. And I was just belt trying to, you know, be all dressed like that in 100 degree heat, you know, playing. I guess you get used to it. We spend quite a few evenings around the table having a Bible study. Maybe invite a group in. We'll have a study some nights. And then we're right next to the South China Sea, so we go out there for baptisms. And here we're baptizing one of Nora's older sisters and some of her children. Her sister died about 6 months later. She had cancer, which was not known at this time. And I know that Nora's so thankful that she was able to go home and have this influence on her family. So we also work in the Philippines, 7,000 islands in 80 different languages. Now I've asked this young lady, where'd she go? She's teaching a class. Okay, Julesy. They studied three languages in school. They studied English. This was basically an English territory for some years, till after World War II. They studied their native dialect for their province and the government language, Tagalog. And so our kids, they're doing good to study one language, I think. But, you know, they studied three languages. And in some areas, the Calasan tribe, I mean, the Tagalog tribe up in the mountains, they have their own dialect, so they may study four different languages in school. They have earthquakes, typhoons, and three major things that happen all the time. I forget the third, you know. We've been there for an earthquake. We've been in Jamaica for one of those. Or a volcano. Yeah, I've not been there for a volcano eruption yet, but they do have them. So what is that? What's the name of this church? Church of Christ. That's not us. It's a denomination started in 1914 by a fellow named Felix Manalo, who thought he was a prophet of God. And I asked, where do they get the money for this in this impoverished nation? Well, they very strongly believe, 1 Corinthians 1, first few verses, let there be no division among you, but be perfected together in the same mind, the same judgment. In the election time, all millions of members vote for the same candidate, whichever candidate gives the church the most money. That's what they tell me. Also, the church owns many businesses, and if you work for the business, 10% of your salary is automatically given to the church, even if you're not a member, but you support the church. I was told that when they begin the service, the doors are all closed, that their idea is, if the Lord comes to take up the church, they don't want anybody to fall out. So they make sure the doors are all closed. That makes sense, doesn't it? Of course, the Mormons are there. Catholics been there for hundreds of years. Some beautiful old buildings. Our brethren have meeting places. This is fairly typical. A little concrete block structure, no windows, no doors, which is good because usually we have people standing outside or sitting outside so they can hear. And that's way up in the hills on a dirt road way back off from civilization. This family, very close to us, the Sabio family, husband, wife, and their two children who are now in Australia. He's the manager of an electrical cooperative there, as well as a preacher. And he has two offices that he's a manager of. And when we're there, when they get off work at 4 o'clock, we have a preaching session. All the employees gather in their community room, and I preach to them. He's converted several. A couple of the young men that he's converted are now preaching. I don't know too many companies in the U.S. that would allow you to gather all the employees and preach to them. I don't think that would go over very far. So it's a different culture. That's the meeting place where the Sabios are. In many places, the church meeting place is right attached to the preacher's home. And the preachers don't typically move every 5 or 6 years. They kind of stay there. Sometimes we have to walk through the fields to get to a meeting place. Terry can take about 16 steps at a time. He walked 4 hours coming to hear preaching. I don't know many folks who drive 4 hours in an air-conditioned car here to go hear somebody preach. But that's just typical. They're hungry. They're hungry for the gospel. We're out. A farm family invites us always to come, and she invites all her neighbors around to come. And so here I am, and there's Sabio next translating for me. And right behind them are some others that are listening to the preaching. They didn't seem to be, what did I do? They didn't be too interested, but they were also there. We had a lot of them around. Another typical place in Dalakitan, and there are about as many people outside as there are inside, and that's a community restroom. Maybe half a dozen houses around there, and that's it. Here's another one. There's a comfort room at another place. It's San Juan. And that's it. We have so much to be thankful for. Now, I've begun a fairly nice house, church, and in the restroom there is a hole in the wall, corner of a room. And that's it. As typical transportation, a tricycle designed for three, but there's one of the preachers there, Rolando Azurin, and his family and some others. I've counted nine on that, and I think I've counted 10 on one. So that's how they, many of them, travel about. Or on top of a jeepney. That's a leftover, the design from when World War II, when we had American soldiers and equipment there, the jeeps, and so they, okay, we'll make our own. And it'll seat about 18 in the back, but you also ride on top, or maybe a pig or a cow on top, something like that. So they do that. Here's an ambulance coming out of the jungle, getting to a road somewhere where they can find a vehicle to take the woman to the hospital. We had a lectureship one evening out in the country, and so the preacher and his wife invited several over for dinner. So now they're preparing dinner for us. They got the fire. They're getting the hide off the goat, all like that, you know. So it's a little bit different. Once a week, we'll have a preacher training. You may have 60 or 70 preachers. My wife may be teaching ladies. She's had as many as 200 in the ladies' Bible class that she teaches. People ask us, aren't you afraid for the Abu Sayyaf and MILF, the Muslim groups that are creating havoc and just destroying everything around? Up in the north where we are, there are not many Muslims up there. What is there is the NPA, New People's Army, a communist group trying to overthrow the government. They're pretty well pacified, but once in a while they'll have some uprising. We've had to change our schedule sometime because of that. But this woman here, Maxima Bangi, was a commander in the NPA. And she was converted, became a Christian. And when the army finally tracked her down, they saw she was no longer a threat, and they said, okay, go in peace. So she was thankful for that. One of the preachers we support, Rogelio and Arsenio Pascual, he was a Pentecostal preacher. In fact, many of the preachers we worked with there were Pentecostal preachers. And people are just open to the gospel. They live, you know, but pretty simply. They took in three girls whose family could not afford to provide for them. And so they took in these three girls. And there's Mai washing the dishes. Apple is rinsing the dishes. And Nur is pumping water for the deal. So that's, you know, pretty common for them. My first trip over there, I stayed in their home, and that was my bed. It's not real comfortable, but you put a sheet on that, then put a sheet over you to get the bugs off, and you do what you can. There's Nur, the one that was pumping water. She's born in Malaysia. Her mother was a Philippine domestic worker. Her father was a Muslim Malay. They abandoned her as a baby. Our grandmother took her in, who died. A great aunt took her in then, and then that great aunt brought her all the way up north to where we are, and that's where Rogelio Pascual, the great aunt's brother, so that's her great uncle, and kind of we helped to raise her, and she's just a precious young woman. We helped her with school and college, and we were there for graduation, and now she's got a job way down in Manila, some hours away. No church where she is, but she rides a bus 4 hours Sunday morning to go to church. Mario Campagnano and his wife were both Pentecostal preachers. She is the niece of Rogelio Pascual. They were converted, and he's just the hardest working preacher that I ever met. He worked about three churches. He'd get up early Sunday morning, ride a bus way up here, preach, and then start back down. And a few years ago, he was assassinated. Left her with four children. One is a total invalid, born with cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy, and just so sad, you know. So two of his sons are taking up some of the preaching responsibilities he had. Xylene is now in Saudi Arabia or somewhere over there, has a nursing degree, and so she is helping to provide for the family back home by the money she earns. Lovejoy, that's her real name in the middle there, preaching out the boondocks somewhere, and she came with three of her friends. They walked a distance over a dirt road, and her three friends came forward to be baptized. And you'll see more about her later on today. But if a 13-year-old can do that and being an influence for the gospel, what can the rest of us do? It just blows my mind away to see how receptive the gospel. 91 baptized on this trip. Usually we go out to the sea or to a river, but none nearby, so we rented a swimming pool to baptize these people. Eileen Galeciano was a youth leader in a Pentecostal church. We were in the car and she said, I need to do this. So we stopped and found an irrigation canal to baptize her. During Easter season, of course, the 80% Catholic just put on just displays. And these men walking down the road, carrying a cross and beating themselves on the back, the blood just flowing down. And they actually crucify people. This woman, this is the third time. They actually nail you to the cross, but they know where to drive nails so it doesn't hit an artery. And she'd just been taken down. The superstition is just unimaginable, what they will do. We've been working in Jamaica for some 33 years. They have big trees there. Here's a little girl from Texas. You can compare her size with a tree there. Driving down the road one day, we have vacation Bible school there. We rent vans and we go around the neighborhoods, countryside picking up kids. So I saw this woman, Sandra Green, walking down the street with her children. That's a 12-year-old whose mother had died. The father didn't want her, so Sandra said she would take her. She started bringing her kids to vacation Bible school. And then I asked my wife and I could come and visit with her one day. So we went up to where they live. One room, maybe 8 by 10, made out of scrap lumber, tin, whatever she could find. No lights, no water. And she invited us in. She opened the door and put a sign on the wall. And I cried. We have so much. We always want more. She had nothing. And I have all I need. What a lesson. Isn't that perfectly logical? If it's not open, it's closed. It makes sense to me. You don't have to really know your English, how to spell to work for the road crew. You know, just know how to paint stuff. For many years, we've had one of our vacation Bible schools, this little, basically 2.5-room schoolhouse. The children love to sing. And even in school, they sing what we call lively choruses. They're little religious songs. God has not yet been kicked out of school there, as he has here. But they just love to sing. It's one of our classrooms there, Flora teaching the ladies' Bible class. And that's most of our kids. We'll have sometimes 80, 90. We've had 100 there. Robert Ogden, young man working with us in Roswell Church for some time, and these two girls, Sophia and Susie. I met Sophia. She worked for the stores. I'd pass by, going time where I'd go for breakfast. I stopped and asked her one day. I said, Sophia, what did I ask her? Huh? Boys ever tell you that you're pretty? You sure that's my question?
You said, did the boys ever tell you you're pretty?
Maybe. My wife sometimes remembers things that I don't remember. I asked her, do you have a boyfriend? She says, no. She's 17 years old. I said, why not? She says, all they want to do is give you a baby and go away, give you a big belly and go away. Unwed birth rate is there about 80%. A boy doesn't want to marry a girl who can't have children. That means they start having sex when they're 13, 14. And then the boy still won't marry him because that's how a boy proves his manhood, having children and fathers. There are men there that have 30 or more children. Do they support them? If they saw men on the street, wouldn't know who they were. This breeds poverty and breeds crime. And I can go on about that. That's something we really have to deal with, fight with all the time. I need to get a new picture of Maxwell, who's a preacher of the Church of Montego Bay. Does a good job there. He drives a taxi some to try to help make his income. He has one artificial leg. When he was young, before he became a Christian, he was drunk one night and laid down the railroad tracks and a train ran over his leg. So he couldn't baptize anybody, get out in the sea there because of the artificial leg. So we brought him and set up some waders. So right away, he had somebody baptized. So he came up out of the water, we pulled off his boots, and that pulled off his leg. So we had to put him back together so he could get up and walk around, you know. For a long time, we'd go visit a couple hours away, a young man who was paralyzed from the neck down. Could not even feed himself. There's our daughter, Shannon, feeding Marlon. He'd become a Christian when he was a young man. And had fallen doing some construction work and broke his neck. He could do this, you know. We had him hooked up on a laptop and, you know, email all this, you know. But he could not raise his hands. And all the years we knew him before he died a couple years ago, I never heard a word of complaint from him. Not one word of complaint. He always had a positive attitude. And it was so thankful. We'd go there with our group of 20 or so. We'd have a devotional. We'd play games. We'd do anything around the house that needed to be done. Quite an inspiration to us. There's some of our kids that are taking a break on the porch of their house. One of them is our granddaughter, Jazzy, or as they call them, their Grand Pickney. Your grandchildren are Grand Pickney, them. They don't say them, they say them. But they have a corrupted English called patois. That's how we transport. That's how we go around our vans, picking up kids and bringing them to BBS. So there's 45 in a 12-passenger van. They kind of stack them in on top of one another. Or you can put a lot in the back end of a pickup truck. You can get a lot of people there. I'm not sure how you steer the thing, because it looks like the front wheel bent off the ground. But welcome to Jamaica. Baptized him when he was about 19. His girlfriend was pregnant. She was about 16. And they tried to get married, but she ran off and left him to raise Sabrina. And so we enjoy our time with him when we're there. He's got a little cook shack where he cooks to help provide for his family. We take a crew down in December, a bunch of college kids. As soon as they take their final exam, then they're on a plane coming down. They do all kind of work there for us. Now then, they're doing what's called pressure washing. That is, you take a bucket and fill it up on the side, and then they get their brushes, you know, to clean the church building there. It's just really amazing to see what these young people do. And Sierra, always enjoy. She is sweet, sweet little one. We're up in the way up in the country, trying to go prepare, do some construction work, repair on a widow's house, and I saw this sign: lumber for rent. I said, what in the world is that? Well, okay, you're building a structure and you have scaffolding. And then when the building is done, you don't need the scaffolding. So you take it back to the lumber yard. And, well, that makes sense. Makes perfect sense to me. We just throw it away. Risha, a little girl, came to VBS when she was about 12 years old. None of her family, members of the church, she was converted. And has been faithful all these years. There were, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 of them lived in a little three-room house, no lights, no water, cooked out of the backyard over a pile of rocks where they make a fire. When she was 16, her mother ran away and left her pretty well in charge to cook and take care of the house. She was 17. She called me one day, said, Uncle David, what can I do? My father has put me out. Okay, you know, you're 18, you're old enough to make it on your own now. One more or less mouth to feed. Well, Frederick, preacher's grandson, was building a little one-room house for them. It wasn't finished. But he moved out, put her in there, and then the summer, the place was finished, and I was able to perform the wedding ceremony. And just a young couple that we love to do with. Two churches that we work with are about 30 miles apart, and they did not even really know either existed until we were there. And so we're having a preaching one night, and a busload came up from down south, about 30 miles away, and had a joint service. We do a lot of street preaching. Gather together, and we have a loudspeaker, and we'll sing a few songs, and people will gather and then have a short message. Then we mingle among the crowd to see who might be interested in a Bible study. And there have been a few baptized from that. One was a young woman, said, she came after our session was over, she said, I want to be a Christian. Okay, let's meet tomorrow. We'll meet in the library and have a study. From there, we went out to the seat of baptizer. And then I learned she was a prostitute. And now she has nowhere to live because she lived in a house of prostitutes. So the American preacher who lived there for 8 years, Jerry Angelo and his wife, Beverly, they said, we'll take her in. Prostitution among the young girls is all over the place, hard to imagine. We'll have a crew of some 20 or so. 1 year we had 32, but it's just introducing them to another culture. And this is just 2.5 hour plane ride from Atlanta, so we're just, you know, we can fly to there closer than we can to California. South Africa, 16-hour flight. We're having in Soweto, a southwest township, very, very dangerous area. Not many will come out at night, but we were having services there. And the songbook is in five, there are 11 official languages in South Africa. And so that songbook, they made their own songbook in five languages. Bumzili Malolo was of the Ndebele tribe, and we had a question and answer period. And so she asked some questions, which were kind of, where's she coming from? So I said, she's trying to reconcile Christianity with her ancestor worship religion, which is widespread all over South Africa. We had a private study with her later and convinced her the Bible was the Word of God, but she couldn't quite then give up, because she's afraid if she, you know, abandoned her ancestor worship, they would come back from the grave and damage her some way. Its superstition is very, very great there. During the years of apartheid, the severe segregation, it was quite a mess there. It's over with now, but Muslims, a lot of Muslims were there. Muslims have memorized prayers for all kind of occasions. I counted 48 on a sign on the wall one day. Here's one of their prayers. Or when a dog barks, I beg Allah's protection from the accursed devil. They despise dogs. So they pray, if a dog barks at them, they're going to pray about that. Or after leaving the toilet with your right foot, I seek your pardon, praise be to Allah who's given me relief. So when you leave the restroom, you're supposed to leave with your left foot. I don't know why, but if you happen to forget and do your right foot, then you ask Allah to forgive you for doing that. Oh, we had a study one night in some Christian's home, and you have to admire the Muslims and Jehovah's Witnesses. They send missionaries all over the world to propagate their doctrines. That's the village where we were having that study there. We were out there in the countryside. He seemed to be interested in what I was doing, but his wife was just bored. She'd just taken a nap there. They're about 8 feet away. We were in a car, so we were not actually walking around. So, you know, so we felt safe. But at lunchtime, all the animals, I don't have any different kinds of them. They're all together. They're not fussing and fighting. They're just getting along together because they're eating a common meal. It's a lesson maybe some of us could learn in our politics here, how to get along and work together. Ancestor worship. One traditional healer for every 500 people, one medical doctor for every 400,000 people. That's a Sangoma. and they cast bones, and how the bones lie, they will read your fortune to you. Superstition everywhere. If a man has AIDS, the way to cure that is to have sex relations with a virgin. So the rape of young girls is just everywhere. Even 8-year-old girls. One of the satanic rituals, this girl, her friend was already dead, and Kirsty was badly burned. She did die a few days later. It was all part of their worship of their ancestors, whatever. He's no longer president, but he had 3 wives when he was inaugurated, and he had 7 later on. So this is part of their African tribal culture. Crime is very rampant. Every house has locked gates, bars on the windows. This is the church building in Brixton, part of Johannesburg. In the paved parking lot there, there's room for about 9 cars. If you get there late, you park outside. As the visitor did one Sunday, parked outside. When the church was over, the car was gone. It had been stolen. So that's just part of living there. It's a very diverse congregation. They've got, you know, all kind of people there. So the church is doing well there, and they have a lot of mixture there. Alan Sylvia Fox, he's the preacher there, and his wife and their daughter, Iona, her husband was at work. They couldn't be there for the picture that day. And then down in American Samoa, a little island down in the South Pacific, here's, you know, Australia. And this little, which is an American territory, Alex and Rowena there. And this was, you know, deeded to the U.S. in 1904. They have representatives in Congress. They can't vote, but they can speak on behalf of the island there. I still have any tribal customs. Once a month, the tribal leaders will have a meeting in all the members of the tribe, and they'll discuss things, and then decided on by the leaders, the chiefs there. And the artwork, carving on trees, all of the island, just amazing what they do with this there, and then way up the top of the tree. How they get up there to do all that, I don't know. I keep pushing the wrong button. I always thought that was Pago Pago. No, it's Pongo Pongo. Very, very important harbor during World War II as a refueling station for our ships in the Navy in the Pacific. Very, very helpful to us. A fellow named Roger Williams came in about 1840 and brought the London Missionary Society. And you can see it's quite an elaborate building and like that. And as we passed by there Sunday morning on our way to our little building, I noticed a long line of people and a table out front, and they're all signing in. That's what they're doing. He said they're signing in and listing their contribution, which will then be read to the church. Would that increase your contributions here? If read, you know, okay, well, Joe and Sally here, they contributed $50 today. I'm not sure how well that would go over, but that's what they do. Maybe that's why they have such elaborate buildings. Maybe people feel compelled to give more for that. They have tsunamis there as well as earthquakes. It's a volcanic island, very small, and you can only live around the coast where you have flat areas. They can't grow products there for eating. You got fruit, but meat and stuff like that, that's got to be imported. And they were about 90 days before they would all begin to die if they did not have the imports coming in to the island. No room for cemeteries, so you bury in your front yard. And I guess if it's filled up, you bury them in the backyard. Then after that, I don't know what they do. Maybe they dig up some of those and start over. There's an old church building, and it used to be a store building that where the brethren meet there. I'm preaching one night on a very complicated subject. They asked me to preach on the Holy Spirit. So these 2 girls sitting on the front row, 11 and 13 years old, Mialofa and Tumua, they took notes on my sermons. And this sermon was kind of detailed, and they only had one pencil. I finally forgot my pencil here. But I was so impressed with these two young girls that are taking extensive notes on my sermons. Last night there, baptized James and his wife, Fa'u, and also Alicia. On the Saturday before the meeting, we had a young people's day. I had teenagers. My wife was teaching ladies, and she was 11 years old. She wasn't a teenager, but she came anyhow. And she's very smart, asked some good questions. So the last night of the meeting, she came forward. We'd had supper with the couple before, and they'd been kind of hesitant, but after she came forward, the invitation song, then James came down with tears in his eyes, and then his wife did. So the little child led them and showed that she had the wisdom to do that. And as Elmer Fudd says, that's all, folks. Thank you for your time. We have gone a bit over time, but we still got several hours today. Thank you all very much.